Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 275 of Her, the podcast where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her life transitions. How are you going to get through them? What about mastering change? Doesn't matter how old you are. Oh, you're going to love this. Wait until you hear this episode. Hold that thought for a moment, because this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Okie dokie, here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. Now, you know we're number one on iTunes, iHeart, all of them, right? We're all about women's health and lifestyle. We want to hear your feedback when you learn about mastering change and transitions in life at any age. So this is your first official reminder. I'll be swinging back with you at the end of the episode. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life.
It's all about her.
So I'm trolling along, you know, the Wall Street Journal, as I always do. Loving it. And I come across one of my most favorite writers. And as all of you know, I am a writer, and I have several of those little New York Times bestsellers to my name. And I love reading people who can write and absolutely crush it when they get their point across. What do I run across? Bruce Feiler. Bruce is probably one of my most favorite writers. He's superb at articulating themes that just absolutely just cut you deep. So this one recently was called Learning to Conquer Life's Crises. And it was about several people who had gone through incredible changes and transitions in their lives. And when that took place, he basically described their life stories. And in doing so, he was able to parse out some pretty amazing lessons for all of us. Lessons that tell us how we can maybe do this more successfully. Happily, very, very happily, he's put this all in a beautiful book. And this book is in my hot little hands. And it's called Life is in the Transition. Now, before we start this episode, I got to tell you about this guy. So if you don't know about him, then you're a loser. Okay? It's as simple as that. This guy is so amazing. You got to read his books. He's a six-time New York Times best-selling author and has done two TED Talks, one of which just absolutely blew me away. And this was the whole story of the Council of Dads. He's probably one of America's most popular voices on contemporary life. And he wrote this book called The Council of Dads, which became a television series, which was amazing on NBC. And he's going to tell us a little bit about what that was, what that was based upon. And this is an incredible piece of his own life story, which really, quite frankly, is a beautiful example of life in transition, to say the least. And, you know, for more than a decade, he's explored the intersection of families, relationships, health, and happiness. He has written about this in a big way. He's done CNN documentaries. I don't really know what to say other than you got to look him up. And that means you go over to Bruce Feiler, that's F as in Frank, EILER.com, and just feast your eyes at the multimedia kingdom he's built to teach, to share, and to articulate themes that I think people really need to hear about. So with that, Bruce, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Thank you very much. I feel like I'm here to let everybody down after that incredibly generous introduction. So thank you very much. It's great to be with you. Congratulations on episode 275. That is a milestone.
I'm exhausted. Celebrating. I'm just exhausted.
Okay, so you just like you put your feet up, like, you know, I'll bring the energy this time. How about that?
I'm just saying, no. What we're gonna do is we're gonna combine energy.
Okay,
we're gonna go,
that's
woo,
good.
You know, and there it is.
We're gonna get through it together. There's a theme for a life transition, right?
Through
it. We're gonna hold each other's hands and like boost each other through a milestone moment. Thank you for having me.
I love it. I just love it. Well, so here we are in the middle of the wildest, weirdest, most bizarre, challenging time in our lifetimes. Unless you're 100 years old and you've lived through, you know, really funky stuff from 100 years ago, and a lot of people have. I'm telling you right now, this is just the biggest crack across the head with a 2x4 to everybody globally, let alone in the United States, with the pandemic, the economic strife, the social strife. I could go on. You get the picture. I mean, good Lord. And then I'm not even going to start with the political strife. So we're sitting here in this whirlwind. And in sitting here in this whirlwind, we say to ourselves, how do I navigate this? How do I get through? So I'm thinking about that when I'm reading this Wall Street Journal piece you wrote, which I thought was just positively brilliant. And one of the things you did, which I couldn't get out of my mind, was you articulated, based upon this book you wrote, which was countless stories of people's lives and how they have transitioned, you came up with some lessons. And one of the things that I thought was so cool, and it just stuck with me, were the three phases that people go through. And I thought maybe we could just start from there, pivot from there. The three phases people go through when this kind of thing hits them. You know, it's just the oh my gosh phase. And I'm going to let you take it because you have the names for those three phases, and they just stuck in my craw, and I kept thinking about them, and you're so right. Go for it.
Well, first of all, thank you, and let me just say to, let me work my way there for a second and say that, yes, we are in this period right now that I call a lifequake, and a lifequake is a massive change where that kind of is higher on the Richter scale of consequences and has aftershocks that last for years. And I got interested in these kinds of periods because I went through a lifequake a number of years ago. As you mentioned, I just got walloped by life. First, I got cancer as a 43-year-old new dad. Then I almost went bankrupt in the last recession. My dad, who has Parkinson's, you know, we don't talk about Parkinson's as a disease of the dopamine, but that's what it is. It affects your movement and your mood. And he got very depressed and tried to take his own life 6 times in 12 weeks. And I just felt like I was under assault from life, right? And I kind of looked out there like there must be a book that can help you when it feels like life is coming at you from all directions. And I couldn't really find it. And so I said, well, you know what? There must be some wisdom out there. And I set off on this journey that you alluded to, where I crisscrossed the country collecting what became hundreds and hundreds of life stories of Americans in all 50 states. People who lost homes, lost limbs, changed careers, changed religions, got sober, got out of bad marriages. In the end, I had 1,000 hours of interviews, 6,000 pages of transcripts. And then I did something that I have not done in 30 years of writing books, is I got a team of 12 people, and we spent a year kind of combing through these stories, trying to find themes and takeaways that could help all of us in times, you know, thrive and, you know, survive, but also thrive in times of change. And so the kind of the big idea that emerged from all of this is that the what I call the linear life is dead. And this is how you and I were raised, right? We're going to have one job, one home, one relationship, one, you know, spirituality, one source of happiness from adolescence to assisted living. Well, that's all gone. And it's been replaced by what I call the nonlinear life, which has many more twists and turns. So my data show that we go through one disruptor, as I call it, every 12 to 18 months. That's three dozen times in our lives. I mean, you think 12 to 18 months, like that's more often than a lot of people see a dentist, right? And this could be something small, like spraining your ankle or getting into an accident, or big, like surviving a tornado or losing your job. But, and most of these, you know, we're pretty good at navigating transition. So most of these we get through relatively easily, but one in 10 of them, three to five times in our lives, we get hit by a life quake. And that's, of course, the moment that we're in now. I've been working on this book for 5 years, half a decade, and it arrives, lo and behold, at this moment when the entire planet is going through a transition. I mean, that's why this book has kind of burned through four printings in 10 days. It's like it's viscerally relevant to people's lives. And so that leads me to the question that you asked. So what happens is, the thing that I want to emphasize is that the life quake that we go through, it may be voluntary or it may be involuntary. Like a voluntary life quake is you choose to move or you choose to start a new venture. An involuntary one is that you get a diagnosis, right? Or you get fired from your job. The life quake can be voluntary or involuntary, but the life transition that comes out of it must be voluntary. Like you have to choose to lean in and kind of go through the steps. So let's just say, so everybody listening to us, you know, perhaps lay awake last night worrying or got up this morning and stared out the window with a cup of coffee. Like everybody is going through a life quake. But the fact that we're going through this collective life quake is a little deceiving because the actual individual transitions that we're going to come out of it, each of us is going to go through a different one. And so now to the point at hand, when you first get into a transition, you usually feel one of two things, either like manic, like I'm going to have a 217 item to-do list and I'm going to get it all done by this weekend and I'll be done by next week. Or you feel like sluggish and like I'm going to lie in a fetal position on my bed because no one's ever been through this and I'm never going to survive. But look at enough of them, as I have done, in certain patterns begin to become clear. So there, the number one pattern is that there are these phases. So one phase is what I call the long goodbye, where you say goodbye to your old self and to that life that's not coming back. Another one is the messy middle, where you shed certain habits and begin to experiment with new ones. And the last one is the new beginning, where you unveil your new self. But here's the point I want to make, and that is, we were told for the first 100 years of this that you have to go through these in order. Like the first person who wrote about transitions 100 years ago said, transitions are like leaving one room, walking down a hallway, and then entering a new room. That turns out to be bunk, because in fact, we do these things out of order. Like you leave one room, you go into the hallway, then you forget something in the room, and then you go back, and then there's something in the next room, and then but you're not ready for that, and you come. Like the process is messier, and it turns out that each of us is good at one of these phases and bad at one of these phases. And so my advice is to start with the one you're good at. So let me just ask you, so you've been through plenty of transitions in your life, like which of these phases, what's your transition superpower and what's your kryptonite?
Well, here's the cool thing. My middle name is When Do We Change Next? I'm not afraid of change. And mm-hmm. if something hits me, and actually, you know, what you need to know is I'm at my laboratory, the National Institutes of Health, I've studied stress and mm-hmm. resilience. And so one of the things I love to look at is that whole issue of how can you adapt and adjust? How can you do that? So I tend to immediately pivot to the messy middle. I go right there mm-hmm. and I say, let me start smelling it all out. Okay, yeah. What's going to work?
Making lists, studying it, think about it. That's you.
I'm the scientist. I go, okay, yes. Plan A, plan B. I have no problem if an experiment blows up in my face. You know, after I mm-hmm. clean up my mess, I just kind of go, oh, well, that didn't go so well. However, it was a learning experience. Let me mm-hmm. try something else. And there you go. And then I look forward to the new beginning. I almost spend 5 seconds holding on to the yeah. past. So I'm one of those.
Yeah, so you're one of the, right. So this is, okay. So this has surprised me, I have to say. Okay, first of all, let me say that when I set out, okay, mind you, I didn't set out looking for this idea of transitions. I sort of feel like I found it, right? This is an idea. I mean, there hasn't been a major book on transitions in 40 years. This is actually the first new model for how to navigate them in 50 years. It's been a little bit out of favor. It was the kind of thing people talked about back in the 70s. So was originally calling it the muddled middle. And I was actually talking, you're going to love this. I was talking to a woman named Rosemary Danielle. So she's a writer in Savannah, Georgia, which is my hometown. She was a really difficult childhood. She had had three marriages. She was abused by multiple husbands, and her mother died died by suicide. And so the first two marriages she left because they were sort of old-fashioned men who didn't support her own creativity. And then her third husband left her. And so she went into this period where she started sleeping around with men, kind of manly men. She lived on an oil rig and kind of slept her way around and dated bikers and people like that. And she eventually married the winner of that search, as I call it. She actually wrote a memoir about this called Sleeping with Soldiers. And they've been married for 30 years. And so I said to her, so tell me about this period, which at the time I was calling the muddled middle. And so I'm like, tell me about the muddled middle. And she's like, Bruce, darling, she's like, you know, that wasn't muddled. Like, I loved it. I learned about myself. I like claimed my sexuality. I was in control of my life. And so that was surprising to me, is that some people thrive in the middle. About half of people say that's their most difficult phase, but a lot of people thrive. I talked to a guy named Rob Adams, who was a management consultant from the Midwest. He was hired to run the Simon Pierce Glass Company in Vermont, family-run company. He starts work a month after the Great Recession. Sales drop by a third in the first quarter. It's not going to work out. But he sticks around a long time. And he said, I liked being a mentor. I liked my job. I liked my colleagues. And then once he finally was pushed out a year into it, boy, he's like, I'm a consultant. I know how to do the middle. Like, I made lists. I called people. And within a few months, he had moved his family to Africa to start a new job. So some people are bad at that, but some people are good at it. And now the long goodbye. And this is why I think, I'm speculating here, but the long goodbye is an emotional process, and it is confronting how we feel. I mean, I looked in the eyes of hundreds of people and I said, what was the biggest emotion you struggled with in your transition? Number one answer, fear.
Oh, fear, yeah. Unknown.
Can I pay the bills? Yeah. Will I get through it? Okay. Fear, number one. Number two, sadness. I liked that old life, right? I liked my job. I liked my legs before I lost them in a biking accident. I liked not having cancer. I liked that marriage before my spouse cheated on me. The third answer was interesting to me, and that was shame. People felt ashamed, like I did something wrong to lose that job, or I'm ashamed that I have a child who has an addiction and no one wants to talk to me.
Oh, shame, blame, and guilt. They all hang out together. Yep. There you go.
So here was interesting. So I said to people, so how did you get through this emotion? And, you know, some people write their feelings down, as you know. And I talked to a woman who left a corporate job. She lived in Maine to start a lifestyle business where she helped people with their second homes. And she wrote her feelings down so that every morning she would see them and have a moment of acknowledging them and then move on. Some people do what I do, which is kind of buckle down. I'm like a stop complaining, kid, go back to work type, right? Just gonna, I'm gonna bulldoze my way through. But 80% of people said they used rituals of some kind. They held a memorial service. They buried something in the backyard. I talked to a guy who was in a loveless marriage for 30 years, got out, came out as gay in his 60s. He went to a sweat lodge to sweat it out. I talked to a woman, Lisa Ray Rosenberg, in Southern California. She went through an awful year. She was a bone marrow donor to her brother. She had a fight and falling out with her mother, and they became estranged. She went on 52 first dates.
Nice.
She actually made a spreadsheet of what she wore.
Oh, come on. Stop it. No way.
No, I'm not making this up.
Stop it.
She made a spreadsheet because she only went on 7 second dates and she didn't want to wear the same thing on the second date that she had worn.
Girlfriend, coordinate that outfit.
She couldn't be expected to remember. So she said, this is not working. Like, what's my biggest fear? Heights? She jumped out of an airplane. A year later, she was married with a child. And so what these rituals are, people don't think of them as rituals, actually. You know, I'm interested in religion, but these people don't even think of themselves as religious in some cases. But it's a gesture to ourselves and to the world around us that, you know what, we're done with that. We're going to say goodbye. And I think looking at the pandemic is interesting because you really saw it there. Like the first few months, we all wanted to believe if we sit inside and change our lives and make sacrifices, we're going to go back. It took a while before we realized, you know what, we're not going back. And I actually think this idea of confronting your emotions, I mean, I encountered this quote yesterday, which I had never seen, which I wish I had put in my book, but I didn't see it yet. I'm going to read it to you right now.
Go for it.
Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced.
I love
James
it.
James Baldwin. Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. So the key part of the long goodbye is kind of accepting the facticity of your situation, like acknowledging that this is an emotional experience. I'm having these feelings, and just articulating them, facing them, accepting them is really important to moving on.
Well, you know, I ended up, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, here I am to make matters even worse, Bruce. I have a double master's in public health, public policy. I got from my alma mater at Berkeley before I went to medical school. So what made matters worse for me is I'm an epidemiologist. So I'm like doing numbers every day in my head. And I'm, you know, calling my colleagues and we're all doing numbers. And we're trying to figure this thing out. What is the case fatality rate and what all the rest of it? But really putting myself in touch with my feelings, to your point, this was something interesting. This is what I felt like. Now, this was hysterical. I had just finished, right before the pandemic hit, I had just finished one of my favorite audibles, you know, because I have my two beloved German Shepherds, so I walk for miles and miles and miles every day. I listen to Audible. And I just finished Stephen King's famous memoir about himself as a writer. It's absolutely, you got to hear this thing. So when the pandemic hit, I literally woke up every day for, I would say, approximately a month, feeling as though I had just awakened into a Stephen King sci-fi thriller called Pandemic. And I was thinking, okay, this sucker's going to go away. This is all like, no. So there was like this completely lizard brain piece of me that was just simply going to the emotional place saying, this is going to go away. I know if I just don't watch the news, if I stop calculating all these numbers and back and forth, it's all going to be okay. And then one day it just hit me. And this was to your point in your fabulous book, you have this point of accept it. And that was, I accepted the fact that this sucker is not going away, and it's a damn coronavirus, you know, which made it even worse because these little, you know, hummers are very difficult to predict, and they're also hard to harness. It's very different than, say, Ebola and some other, you know, viruses hanging around. And so then I accepted the fact that, okay, there's going to be a new normal here. I'm not going to like it, right off the bat. Everything's changed, new narrative, defining everything differently. So to your point again, yeah, everyone does it. Now, I coursed through mine pretty quickly. I went through my own little machinations, and then I just said, that's it, get her done. You know, we're going to find some way to negotiate and redefine.
Yeah, I mean, this raises an interesting question, Pam, that I haven't really thought about, which is that I wonder if people for whom, if you go back to the construct here, right, we have the long goodbye, the messy middle, and the new beginning. Everyone's good at one, bad at one. I wonder if people who are kind of who lead with emotion, you know, may be better and linger and at the long goodbye, and people who kind of lean toward numbers and systems and analysis, maybe those people thrive in the messy middle, because that's really kind of more what happens in the messy middle. It's an interesting question. Okay, so let's just now establish, okay, fine, you've said goodbye, you've confronted your emotions, you've ritualized it, marked them, you got a memento on the shelf. Mementos, by the way, hugely important. Because what mementos do is allow us to have something of there over on the shelf, because you can look at it, you can connect to it, you can like snack on it, if you will, and then you can move on. So now you're in the next phase. Now what are you going to do? Okay. And now we get to what you were talking about how you create your way into. So there's kind of two tasks that take place in the messy middle. The one is shedding certain habits, So let's take, you know, your example, right? So you're now accepting that we're not going to go back. That means you're going to have to give up something. And it could be something that you like, but people, you know, tend to shed things, interestingly enough, that they don't like. Like maybe you've been a people pleaser, right? Or maybe you've been, you know, a little lazy and you want to start exercising more. Or I talked to a woman, Lee Wentz, who had a really difficult year. She was diagnosed with cancer. She decided that she was going to leave a bad marriage. She was traveling a lot. And she said what she decided to shed in her life transition was the habit of every time she walked in the house, she opened the fridge and got something out, that she was using food, in her case, to kind of shield the fact that there was a lot of unhappiness around her. And she said, finally, and in her case, she went on to shed 60 pounds. Finally, I'm going to stop yo-yo dieting and I'm going to really change my life. And that shedding opens people up to one of the things that really fascinated and kind of surprised me, which was astonishing acts of creativity.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, when you hop off the gerbil wheel, you forget you're in the gerbil wheel. You just forget. And then all of a sudden, everyone had to come to an abrupt halt, whether they liked it or not. And I think some people called it the great pause. Hit that pause button. And then all of a sudden, you're like, whoa. Now, that happened to you. And I remember this from your TED Talk about the Council of Dads. In many respects, it was your turtle walk.
My gosh, you're good.
No, I do my homework. And in the turtle walk, you actually tell your beautiful little, you know, twin daughters, you know, find a turtle and walk behind it. You know, use it that, look at life at that pace sometimes. Because when you do that, then all of the monkey brain that takes over when you're on that gerbil wheel and running around and everything's just one big, you know, frenetic mess up there, all of a sudden, there you are. It's you and silence. And most people have never even sat with their own silence to realize that when you walk through the front door and you hit the fridge and you pack in all of those what I call munchable anesthetics, you know, to numb the pain and stress of life, all of a sudden you realize you're actually doing that. That's where the creativity comes in. What do you think?
So what I think is that when you go through a transition, you feel isolated, you feel alone, you feel kicked out of the kind of the rhythms of everyday life. You mentioned when I had cancer, I had an osteosarcoma in my left femur. 600 people a year get one, 85% are under 21. There's 100 adults a year who get one. And I would sit at my home in Brooklyn looking out the window. I was on crutches for 2 years. And I would look out the window and I would think, well, you don't have cancer or you know how to walk. And I would just be bitter and angry and isolated. And I just felt removed from kind of the mainstream rhythms of life. And that can be painful. It's one of the most difficult parts of the process. But you know what thrives when you're outside those rhythms of life? Creativity thrives. Like you begin to kind of make yourself anew. I mean, I talked to, and some of these are new things, but some are old. I talked to a woman named Helen Kim, who's an Asian American chemistry professor at a university in Alabama. She got stomach cancer and she couldn't eat with her colleagues anymore. She just really, she'd have to go to the bathroom in the three times in the middle of a you know, kind of a work dinner. She was the caretaker for her spouse, and she decided that her husband wasn't going to take care of her, so she leaves her marriage. And she says, you know what I'm going to do? I always wanted when I was a kid to be a ballerina. But my mother was on this kind of, in her case, the kind of this Asian American traditional path. And she said, you know what, I'm going to take adult ballet classes to kind of fulfill that dream. I talked to a woman who lost her job. She was much younger, in her 20s. She was at Fox News. She left Fox News. She renounced her conservative views. She went through a depression. She said, I played ukulele through my depression because Everything sounds good on a ukulele.
Well, that's true too. I've done that.
You don't
need
a lot of skill. I mean, I talked to, you mentioned my Wall Street Journal excerpt from Life is in the Transitions, Zach Herrick.
He was
he was a born black in Kansas, adopted by a white family, kind of wandered through life, ended up in the army, has his face shot off by the Taliban. 31 surgeries, Pam, between the tip of his nose and the tip of his chin, including having his tongue sewn back on. His mother moves to Virginia, where he's rehabilitating because he's on the brink of having suicide ideations. And she says, you know what? You should start to cook because your tastes have changed. So he starts to cook. He's like, I can bake salmon now. Like, the girls really love it when I go on a date. And then he starts writing poetry. And then he tells me he starts to paint.
I love it.
Splattering paint on the canvas. He's like, you know that guy Jackson Pollock? Like him. I'm like, wait a minute, Zach, if I told your like high school football playing self in the Midwest that you were gonna like write poetry and cook and paint, he's like, I thought it was stupid. But he said, I used to get out my hostility by splattering the enemy with bullets, and now I splatter paint on the canvas. This is creativity. This is making yourself anew. And we've been talking about the pandemic. It was almost a cliche. What did everybody do? They started to bake bread. Right? We're going to sourdough our way through this baby, right? That's what everybody's impulse was. And I have to say, I was not surprised in the least, because what that creativity is making ourselves anew, finding a new way to find new life. And when you're at the bottom of your life, when you think there is no more life, this life force comes out of you in a way that's totally inspiring.
Yeah, and I absolutely love it. I'm staring at the picture of former Army Sergeant Zachary Herrick as he stands in front of one of his incredible paintings from that Wall Street
Amazing.
Journal article. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, gosh, I go back to this Einstein quote, in the midst of difficulty lies opportunity. And I always think about that. And I look at this unbelievable situation we're in with the pandemic. But, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. Look what it's done. You know, we were forced into hitting that pause button. We're forced into it. You have no choice. You have nowhere mm-hmm. else to go. And many people have nothing else to do, or it's greatly reduced, or it's been redefined in very strangely for them. And so people sit back and they start having a moment now to actually look at the purpose and the meaning of your life. When's the last time you ever had time to do that?
Yeah, I call this a meaning vacuum, right? What happens
yeah.
in a life quake is that it's a meaning vacuum, and that what and out of that, it's also a meaning forged. Like, we create a meaning in our life. You know, one of the things I have in this book is what I call the ABCs of meaning, right? The good news about life in the 21st century is we can write our own story. We do have many opportunities. 100 years ago, you had to live where your parents wanted you to live and do what your parents wanted you to do and marry who your parents wanted you to marry and believe what your parents wanted you to believe. All of that is gone for the most part now. We can do what we want to do and believe what we want to believe. We can change our religions, we can change our jobs, we can change our relationships, we can change where we live. But that's a lot of change, and there's a lot of pressure on that. And so how do we navigate this with what I call the ABCs of meaning? And so the A is agency, right? That's what we do or make or create, like our work lives, are the things that we are responsible for. The B is belonging. That's our relationships and connections and family and friends and neighbors and colleagues. And the C is a cause. It's something higher than yourself. It's a purpose. It's a calling. And so the way I've come to think about this is that what happens in these life transitions is that we shift the balance and priority we give to each one. Right? So maybe we've been working too hard and we want to spend more time with our family. Maybe we've been a primary caretaker and we're an empty nester now and we want to give back. Or maybe we've been giving back and we're burned out and we want to do something for ourselves. But think of Lady Justice with not two scales, but three. And each of these scales is kind of the ABCs of meaning. And that what we do in a transition is we kind of move some pebbles or coins or whatever it would be from one scale to the other and kind of remake the balance. And so what I want to say, you know, in response to that Einstein quote, I want to say that yes, a life transition is an opportunity, but I also want to say that it's a difficult and painful one, and that we shouldn't overlook the fact that it's emotional, that we have to mourn, that we have to say goodbye. If you push yourself too quickly to the new and the, we were talking about this earlier, you might feel a little cheated. And I feel like it is part of it to accept the fact that there is pain involved. But yes, there is opportunity for growth and renewal. And I guess I would say, the way to think about it is as a story. Right. One thing I learned from collecting life stories, starting with my dad, when I started having my dad answer a question every week about his life story, is that that story about kind of who you are and where you came from and where you are now and where you want to be going, that's not just part of you. That story is you in a fundamental way. Like, life is the story that we tell ourselves. And we think about our lives as fairy tales, right? We have a hero and we want to have a happy ending. But the truth is, as you know, and if you've studied in your life, it's the wolf that makes it a fairy tale. Like, in the middle of it, the wolf shows up, or a dragon, or an ogre, or a tornado, or a downsizing, or a death, or a pandemic. And life is about how you get through the wolf, or around the wolf, or under the wolf, or over the wolf, or whatever it is. It's what happens when you get stuck in the woods and how you figure out to move on. And so the kind of the key act of a transition, it is fundamentally a narrative act where we add a new chapter to our life story in which we said we went through this horrific time and we did have to mourn the old you, the long goodbye, the part that's not coming back, but we managed to find something constructive and positive that is setting us up for the life that's to come. So this is about adding a new chapter to your story.
Well, this is why in your book, which is just ridiculously cool, you have a part two called Reshaping Your Life. Mm-hmm. And everyone out there on the Her Podcast land, just listen up to how this rolls and grab the book and actually figure this out. Listen to how he teaches you. So in Reshaping Your Life, you accept it, okay? And so this is all about identifying your emotions. I shared about what happened with me when I stopped waking up in the morning feeling like I was walking into a Stephen King sci-fi thriller and suddenly realized, no, this is my life. This is, there you go. The next one is market. I love this. Ritualize the change. You said this beautifully, Bruce, when you were talking about rituals and you were talking about tokens and really giving it some meaning there as you're about ready to say bye-bye. Shed it. Speaking of bye-bye, give up the old mindsets. And so instead of saying, it's something I love to call it, it's sort of my trademark term, BMW, bitch, moan, and whine. Why isn't it like it was? I said, and I'm like, get over it. Come on now, grow a set. And then create it. Try new things. Come on, man. And when you're creative, you're brave. You're courageous. You're putting it out there, and you cast aside the one thing you said before, Bruce, fear. Screw fear. I'm going to paint this. If you don't like it, that's your problem. You could leave. And it's something that George O'Keefe used to say all the time. Really? You think that my paintings look like female genitalia? Huh, interesting. That was for her first pictures of her irises. And she says, really? Is that really what you think? To the New York critics. She says, fine. So she made them even bigger. She had monster canvases of irises, and she laughed her ass off in her little Santa Fe home there. And then the next thing here after create is share it. Seek wisdom from others. And this is kind of what we're doing today. We're seeking wisdom, from each other. Bruce is sharing his, I'm sharing mine. You're listening, you're saying, wow, I have things to share too. And then the next thing is, come on, girlfriends, launch it. Unveil your new self. Like, put it out there and say, honey, look at this. Feast your eyes. You don't like it? There's the door. Right? Come on. And be transparent and also realize that you're open to feedback. Like, how's this working? How can I nuance this better? How can I refine this? How can I tell my true truth about what I'm going through right now in this new kind of redefinition, my new normal? And then finally, this is the part I really love. And in your book, you have this really cool part about telling your own life story. So this one is compose a fresh story. This is your story. Don't you be listening to other folk. You tell your own story. Because if you know what your story is, then like a solid oak, you just stand there and you hold true to it. No matter what anyone else says, you hold true to it. But you can't do that if you haven't written it. That's one of the reasons why I think this is a very powerful book. Because this is a chance now to do your own life story interview, which is precisely what's in the book, in the back of the book. Tell us about that, Bruce.
So what happened, first of all, that was just beautiful. And I appreciate your saying it and your enthusiasm and your relating to it personally, because it really is going to inspire others to go through this process. No one has laid this out like this in 40 years. And I didn't go seeking it, but it was so clear. I want to just be very clear. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm showing you what other people do. And some of these you may do naturally, but no one does all seven of those tools. And everybody wants to get better at it. And that's why I put in the second half of the book all these examples of what people do. So it's like, you know, this is what my wife says. Like, I don't want to listen to you tell me what to do. You show me other people, like, then I want to relate to them. And some of these stories, you're going to think like, whoa, like, that is not like me. But you're going to find yourself echoed in some of these stories. But where, to go back to the very beginning, where this began was with my sending my dad. When my dad tried to take his own life, I would send him a question, tell me about the house you grew up in. And he couldn't move his fingers, like he couldn't even type. He would dictate it to Siri and then spit it out and show it to my mom. And then it was, you know, tell me, how'd you become an Eagle Scout or join the Navy and how'd you meet mom? And it was this act of storytelling that went on every Monday morning for 5 years until my dad, who had given up on his life, who had never written anything longer than a memo in his life of like 8 words, backed into writing a 52,000 word autobiography. It was the most powerful thing, Pam, that any of us had ever seen. And then that is what led me to the idea that our life is a story. It turns out there's a whole field called narrative gerontology, right? And narrative adolescence and narrative medicine. And so the idea of thinking about our lives as a story. And so that's what led me to the Life Story Project. And so what I have done in the back of Life is in the Transition is list the questions that I asked people in this life story interview that would go on for 2 or 3 hours. If you want to have your own family, to have it as a keepsake. So tell me about the story of your life. What's the high point, the low point, the turning point, all of the questions that I asked. And in fact, I've now gone one step further, which you wouldn't know because I've just done this in the last few days on brucefeiler.com. I have a service where if you sign up for just, you know, not that much, you know, I don't know, 40, 50 bucks or something like that, we will send your loved one a question every Monday morning about their life. So if you want to do what I did with my dad with your own loved one, I've set up a way to do this because, as you know, those of us with aging parents know, you want to get these stories. So yes, it began with story for me. It involved my hearing life stories. And so I really want to encourage people to think about their life story and, in this case, give you the tools to make it easier so that you can do it. Because fundamentally, this is a narrative event, and we have this opportunity. And I just like the way you said it a minute ago. Like, it ain't her story. It ain't his story. It ain't my daughter's story, my friend's story, my mom's story. It's my story. And your story is going to be different. And just giving yourself permission to think of it as a story is incredibly empowering. And the thing about the shape of your life is that some people turn out to be me-oriented and agency-oriented, and it wants to be what they create. But a lot of people, you know, in fact, more women than men, are belonging-oriented and relationship-oriented, and they define their story as making sure everybody else around them is cared for, right? And then some people, like my wife, is very cause-oriented. My wife started an organization that helps entrepreneurs around the world. Like, for her, like, the cause is the most important thing, right? She tolerates the rest of us, but she's cause-driven, and it's okay. And I had to learn this the hard way, that people's life story, and they change. I talked to a woman, Michelle Swaim, grew up in a broken family. Her mother didn't want to be a mom. She would sit after school for hours. Michelle married her high school sweetheart, who was a guy who became a preacher, and he was the dominant one in their relationship. And she just ran, jogged herself into complete anorexia. She was down to half an apple a day. And one day in Boston, where she lives, she slips on the ice. She ends in the hospital. She has a vision from God saying, "I did this to you on purpose." Her husband comes in the next day. He had a vision from God. He had done this to her on purpose that they would change their lives. And Michelle had been unable to have children because of her anorexia. They went on to adopt 11 children from four refugee countries. And when
Loving
I asked,
it.
I asked
Woo!
Her the shape of her life, she said a dented minivan, because her life was about carrying people around and caring for this little community. And she went from being, in her life transition, from being self-oriented to being other-oriented. And that's how she finds meaning now.
All right. So now, as we're wrapping this up, because seriously, Bruce, why don't we just move in? Okay. We could sit here talking about this
really
and working on this forever. This is so amazing.
What a
so
pleasure.
At the very end of your Wall Street Journal piece, which I just found to be amazing, you said this, and therein lies the point. Perhaps the most important thing I learned in more than 1,000 hours of interviews is that a life transition is a meaning-making exercise. And it's one that works. A transition is the slow, effortful process of turning the cacophony of a lifequake into the melody of everyday life. Because we have to spend so much time of our adult lives in these unsettled states, we should stop viewing them as periods that we have to grit and grind our way through. We should see them instead for what they are: healing periods that take the wounded parts of our lives and begin to repair them. Now, those words were just absolutely magical. But you said something in your TED Talk. Well, hell, you said a lot of things in your TED Talk about the Council of Dads that I just loved again, in addition to the turtle walk. You said
take
something
a walk
else.
With a turtle. Behold the world in pause.
Yeah, just take a walk. Okay. So here's the deal, right? We're hitting the pause button. We're redefining a new narrative. We're muddling through. We're doing the best we can to be able to find that new beginning, to reinvent ourselves in many respects, but most importantly, to do deep examinations of meaning and purpose in life. And then you have to ask the question, were you just doing or were you actually living? And this was the quote that I loved that you said: everybody dies, not everybody lives. And that just, whoa, girlfriends out there, Herb Podcast Land, let that little hummer settle right down to your ovaries. Think about that. Everybody dies, but not everybody lives. You elect, you choose right now to live. And you develop the narrative, the story of your life, to be able to live with. What's your platform? What's it look like? So I can't even begin to tell you how happy I am that we've had Bruce Feiler on with us, who is the author of this extraordinary book. Honey, buy it now. Just hit Amazon. Life is in the Transitions. And then the subtitle, Mastering Change. Don't run away from it. Mastering Change at Any Age. Learn more about Bruce's extraordinary breadth of knowledge and his work by going over to Bruce Feiler, again, F as in Frank, EILER.com. Just click there and have a little look. Just sit back, feast your eyes, grab the book, grab more than one book. Lord knows he's got them. And learn more, because this is the time to do it. No better time than now. After all, we are in transition. Bruce, thank you so much for being on the Herb Podcast.
I got tears in my eyes, Pam. What an honor. Transitions work, everybody. We'll get through this if we do it together. There's wisdom out there. We can beat back the wolves together.
Oh, yes, we will. And right now, run on over to iTunes and voice your rate and review. I want to hear your feedback. How did all this settle on you? Yeah, I know what you're saying. You're saying, OMG. How do I know that? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and I'm host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Hey, thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay well.